Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Ashtuttar Sutashri Srimad His Divine Grace Lacey Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Nitai Go Premanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. What's the verse number? It's not, place marker's not in here and I forget. Which chapter? 14, 20. 25, you said? 1425. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening, text number 25. Word meanings, Shmashana, burning crematorium, Chakra Anila, whirlwind, Dhuli, dust, Dhumra, smoky, Vikirna, vidyota, thus smeared over beauty. Jata kalapaha, bunches of matted hair. Bhasma, ashes. Avagundha, covered by. Amala, stainless. Rukma, reddish. Deha, body. Devaha, the demigod. Tribi, with three eyes. Pashyati, sees. Devara, younger brother of the husband. Your. Smashana channa chakra nila duli dumra. Vikirna vidyota jata kalapa. Pasma vagunta malarukma deho. Devastri bhi pasyati devaraste. Smashana chakra nila dhuli dhumra. Vikirna vidyota jata kalapa. Vasma vagunta mala rukma deho. Devastri bhi pasyati devaraste. Nikirna vidyota dita kalapaha. Vasma vagunta malarukma deho. Nevastri vipashyati devaraste. Mushana chakra. Vikirna vidyota jata kalapa. Vasma vagunta malarukma deho. Nivasili pashyati devaste. Shana chakra nila dhuli dhumra. Vikirna vidyota jata kalapa. Avagunta malarukma deho. Nivastri vipashyati devaraste. Smashana Chakra Niladhuli. Nikirna Vidyotidhata Kalapa. Vismavagunta Malarukma Deho. Nivastribi Pasyati Devaraste. Some interesting words here, at least to me. You know, the shmashana. Shmashana means a crematorium. We hear in about shmashana vairagya, right? This phrase, shmashana vairagya. That's the renunciation at the crematorium. You see somebody being cremated and you think, oh, I'm going to get really serious about my Krishna consciousness now because this is where I'm going to end up. That's called, then you go home and forget it all. That's called smashana vairagya. And Duli, there's a song about Lord Chaitanya, right? Duli, Duli, Gora, Chandra, something, I forget how it goes. Duli means the dust. So we're interested in Pada Duli, dust of the lotus, Vaishnava Pada Duli, the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. And then there's Jata. Jata means the matted locks. You know, the sages have their hair all, you know, matted locks, dreadlocks. That's Jata, his word is here. So this is a description of Lord Shiva, translation. Lord Shiva's body is reddish, and he is unstained, but he is covered with ashes. His hair is dusty from the whirlwind dust of the burning crematorium. He is the younger brother of your husband, and he sees with his three eyes. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity, nor is he in the category of Vishnu or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is far more powerful than any living entity up to the standard of Brahma, yet he is not on an equal level with Vishnu. Since he is almost like Lord Vishnu, Shiva can see past, present, and future. One of his eyes is like the sun, another is like the moon, and his third eye, which is between his eyebrows, is like fire. He can generate fire from his middle eye, and he is able to vanquish any powerful living entity, including Brahma. Yet he does not live pompously in a nice house, etc., nor does he possess any material properties, although he is master of the material world. He lives mostly in the crematorium, where dead bodies are burnt, and the whirlwind dust of the crematorium is his bodily dress. He is unstained by material contamination. Kasyapa took him as his younger brother because the youngest sister of Diti, Kasyapa's wife, was married to Lord Shiva. The husband of one's sister is considered one's brother. Of course, we would say, what, brother-in-law, and we would say brother-in-law. By that social relationship, Lord Shiva happened to be the younger brother of Kasyapa. Kasyapa warned his wife that because Lord Shiva would see their sex indulgence, the time was not appropriate. Diti might argue that they would enjoy sex life in a private place. But Kasyapa reminded her that Lord Shiva has three eyes, called the sun, moon, and fire, and one cannot escape his vigilance any more than one can escape Vishnu. Although seen by the police, a criminal is sometimes... a spider on my book here. Although seen by the police, a criminal is sometimes not immediately punished. The police wait for the proper time to apprehend him. The forbidden time for sexual intercourse would be noted by Lord Shiva, and Diti would meet with proper punishment by giving birth to a child of ghostly character or a godless impersonalist. Prabhupada puts them in the same category, impersonalists and ghostly characters. Kasyapa foresaw this, and thus he warned his wife, Diti. Om Agyanati Mirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Lord Shiva is an interesting personality. He's so elevated. All of these external features that we can show that he's not influenced by them. He's not influenced at all by the material nature. And he's really, you know, horrible things, living in a crematorium, just imagine, getting the dust of burnt bodies covering your body. I think most of us would probably faint if that happened to us. It'd be so despicable, we wouldn't be able to tolerate it. But he's transcendental to all of this. Now here it's said that he has three eyes. It's often said that he has five heads. In fact, I came across a statement one place, Lord Shiva has five heads and three eyes. And I thought, well, only one head has eyes? Or are there three eyes on each head? Or so I tried to see what AI had to say about it. So I asked, it kind of gave me this roundabout answer. Well, you can see it this way, or you can see it that way, or I'm kind of like, don't worry about it. Depending on how, they talk about different, you know, presentations of him. So he's sometimes shown in one way, sometimes shown in another. Well, anyway, he has three eyes, and then we said to have panchanana, he has five heads. And of course, as Prabhupada points out here, he's not in the category of Vishnu, and he's not in the category of an ordinary jiva. And then we have, of course, he has different names. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a whole list of different names of Lord Shiva. So I thought today I would read some, I guess you might say, technical information about Lord Shiva from the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. If you don't know what that is, Laghu Bhagavatamrita was written by Srila Rupa Goswami. Bhagavatamrita, of course, just like this follows the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami wrote the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which we often talk about. That's the story of first Narada Muni traveling all over the place, trying to find out the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And then the second part is Gopakumar. He's also going all over the place, experiencing different devotees in different stages of pure devotional service. So the idea of that book, actually, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, this was the first major work of the Goswamis, actually. Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the idea is to present the Bhagavatam, the teachings of the Bhagavatam, in a story, more straightforward story form. Because as you read the Bhagavatam now, it's a little hard to sometimes keep your bearings where you are exactly. So it's nice to hear a story, but the story is full of all kinds of teachings. And actually the setting is that after Pariksit Maharaj had heard the Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, his mother, who apparently wasn't in attendance, there was a little time just before Pariksit Maharaj was going to die. So she said, can you give me a summary of what Shukadeva Goswami taught you? So that's the source. That's how the Brihad Bhagavatamrita came to be. And Sanatana Goswami says that it's actually an ancient scripture. And what that means is that Sanatana Goswami was able to see it. That's called a rishi. There are so many. So these scriptures, they exist eternally. And those who have the transcendental vision, they can see them in their eternal form, even though they may be unmanifest. So Sanatana Goswami delivered that Brihad Bhagavatamrita, teaching of the Bhagavatam. And this Sri Laghu Bhagavatamrita is by Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami considered himself a disciple of Sanatana Goswami, or at least a subordinate to him. And he wanted to summarize the teachings of Brihad Bhagavatamrita by just giving, that you might say, the information, the data there about the different forms of the Lord, the Bhagavatam, the technical points, you might say. So that's what lagu, brihad means great, and lagu means lesser or lighter or smaller. That's the idea. Lagu, it's lighter. And so it's a shorter work. But it's also quite a substantial work. I read, this came out, the BBT published this in 2017. I think a lot of devotees are probably not very familiar with it. It's a wonderful book, actually. There's so much information, things you wonder about different avatars and so on. It's all laid out here in this Lagu Bhagavatamrita. So towards the beginning, in chapter 2, the chapter is about the Purusha avatars and also the Guna avatars. So the Purusha avatars are Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And the Guna avatars are Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. So this is the section on Lord Shiva, the Guna avatar, Lord Shiva or Rudra. So there's quite a bit here. I'm going to do probably a substantial amount of reading here so we can see what kind of information we can glean from this. So this begins. This is, again, chapter 2. This is text 26. It says, regarding Sri Rudra. So he just spoke about Brahma. So he speaks about Brahma, that Guna avatar. There we get, actually we get some different insights about Brahma that most of us don't know about. For example, there are three, Lord Brahma has three different forms. Sometimes, of course, the Jiva, it takes that role, and sometimes Lord Vishnu takes the role, Lord Vishnu himself. There are also another place, I think it's Jiva Goswami that mentions, sometimes the Brahmas, of course Brahma lives a very long time, 311 trillion years. So there are different, we have such a small perspective actually on time. We tend to, condense it really down. But when you look at these cosmic ages and a lifetime of Brahma, so the Brahmas also come and go. So sometimes Brahma is a devotee and sometimes he's a karmi and sometimes he's a jnani. So we're lucky this time we got a devotee Brahma. Otherwise, you have to live through karmi Brahma for 311 trillion years. It gives you an idea how long we hang around in this material world. This idea of trillions, it's always shocking to me. We just throw around the word trillion. I've mentioned before, well, you know what a trillion seconds is? Or even a billion seconds, a billion seconds. A billion seconds is 36 years. You think, wow, that's something, I can get my head around that. 36 years. Of course, you may be surprised. 36 years, wow. A billion seconds? Well, a trillion is 36,000 years, because it's 1,000 times a billion. So that's just 1 trillion. In our little bodies, we have, according to the scientists, every microbe, we, at least according to our understanding, is. There's a jiva there in every living thing, right? So we have in our body both human bacteria or germs or whatever you want to call them, and then we have other foreign entities in there. So we have 30 trillion human and 39 trillion non-human. So 69 trillion jivas are in this little tiny space of, half a cubic meter or whatever it is. So how many, actually it says in the Bhagavatam, there are many jivas in the material world as there are atoms. So it's really incalculable. So these mass numbers. So Lord Brahma, he's an extraordinary personality, lives such a long time. So many living entities come and go in so many bodies over that period of time. So the point I was saying that Brahma was just described. So now we're going to hear about Rudra, the Lord Shiva. Regarding Sri Rudra, Rudra has 11 expansions, and he also has 8 bodies. He is usually described as having 5 faces, 3 eyes, and 10 arms. I forget about the 10 arms part. So he's heavily armed, right? He can really hurt somebody. So this is the commentary. Now this commentary This is the commentary is written by Gopi Pranathana Prabhu. He's the one who translated this and presented the commentary on it. And he's relying on the commentary of Baladev Vidyabhushan. Baladev Vidyabhushan Prabhu, of course, was a great, great Vaishnav scholar. And he commented on a number of the Goswami's works, and including this one. So what Gopi Pranathana Prabhu is presenting here is coming directly from Baladev Vidyabhushan. So he says, as the scriptures relate that the role of Brahma is sometimes assumed by Vishnu and sometimes by an empowered Jiva, so various scriptures relate that the role of Rudra, Shiva, is also assumed in these two ways. So we tend to think of Shiva in one particular way, but sometimes an ordinary Jiva takes the role of Rudra. Rudra as a direct expansion of Lord Vishnu is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto in a verse that describes the Supreme Lord assuming the forms of all three guna avatars. So guna avatar, so he's one of the incarnations of the Lord, direct incarnation. The original Rudra expands himself in many forms in the material world, including the 11 Rudras. So here's a quote from the Mahabharata. I'll just read the translation. Actually, it just gives names. So these are 11 names or forms of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva appears as Ajaikapat, Ahirbhadna, Virupaksha, Raivata, Hara, Bahurupa, the best of demigods, Triambaka, Savitra, Jayanta, Pinaki, and Aparajita. So the Shaivites, I'm sure they chanted these as mantras, all these names. He also expands as 8 Shivalingas, Shivalinga incarnations, presiding over 8 elements, who are worshipped as deities. So this is from the Mahabharata also. The 8 deity forms preside over earth, water, fire, air, ether, the sun, the moon, and the offerer of soma sacrifice. Lord Rudra is, this is a reference to the verse itself that this is a commentary on. Lord Shiva is, quote, usually described as having 5 faces, unquote, because sometimes he is seen with only one, and in that form, as in that form seen within the layer of water that covers the universe. So that's one of his residences. You know, there are coverings of the universe. So Lord Shiva is in the water covering. I think this may be described later here. So the next verse, text 27. Some scriptural statements indicate that Lord Hara is an individual jiva like Brahma. So that's another name, of course. In Navadvip Dham, there's a Harihar Kshetra. There's a deity, half Hari, half Hara. And it's said that if you die there at Harihar Kshetra, you go back to Godhead. There are descriptions of partial expansions of Hara, similar to some statements about Anantashesha. So what's this about? Oh, here, commentary. Lord Chaitanya taught Sanatana Goswami that Lord Rudra is neither Vishnu nor a finite jiva, but is in a special intermediate category of his own. But Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana, in his commentary on the previous two verses, uses the word Ishvara in reference to Rudra's original appearance in this world, indicating virtual equality with the personality of Godhead. So we're going to see more of this idea here, that he's, so here it says, virtual equality. He's called the Ishvara. So he's so much like God that he has that. He's also called Maheshvara. Generally, of course, the word Maheshvara would mean Krishna. He's the supreme, the great, great Ishvara. But even Lord Shiva gets that name because, in one sense, he is Krishna. Actually, Lord Vishnu himself says that. One should not see any difference between me and Lord Shiva. So continuing the commentary, Lord Anantashesha, the bedstead of Mahavishnu and a direct expansion of Godhead, Anantashesha, can empower a jiva to act in his name so that the jiva can hold material, the material planets on his serpent hoods. Lord Rudra similarly empowers Jiva representatives. These are described in many scriptures, beginning with the Rig Veda. There's a quote here. Whomever I choose for the role, I empower as a fearsome Rudra, a Brahma, a sage, or a wise man. So you see what position he holds. He can even empower Lord Brahma, a person in that post, and the Rudras. The Narayan Upanishad states, then the Purusha Narayan desired, let me create progeny. So there's a bunch of different quotes here about Narayana, I guess because, let's see. Oh, it says, from Narayana, the 11 Rudras were born. That's from one of the Upanishad. And also this is from the Maha Upanishad. There was only Narayana, not Brahma or Shiva. While he was absorbed in meditation, there appeared from his forehead a person with three eyes holding a trident in his hand and displaying the opulences of truth, celibacy, austerity, and renunciation. The Rudras depicted in these and the following passages are empowered jivas, since they take birth and have other limitations. So here these are quotes. Where is this from? This is from Mahabharata also. Moksha Dharma. I alone create Prajapati, Brahma, and Rudra. Both of them, bewildered by my maya, fail to know me in truth. So that's when they're empowered jivas, apparently. That's what it just said, right? The Rudras depicted in the following passages are empowered jivas, since they take birth and have other limitations. So here's another quote. This is from the Vishnu Dharma Purana. Brahma, Shambhu, or Rudra, the gods of the sun and moon, Indra and others are empowered with the potency of Lord Vishnu. When the period of the material creation ends, manifested creation ends, their powers are withdrawn, they become powerless, and their forms return to the material elements from which they were born. So the idea is they just have ordinary bodies sometimes. So now text 28. When Lord Hara is a personal expansion of the Purusha, he is nearly transcendental to the material modes. Nearly transcendental. But because of his contact with the mode of ignorance, all in this world perceive him as subject to transformation. We find in the 10th canto that, quote, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature. He manifests three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. So this is in chapter 88 of the 10th canto. This is where I guess Shukadeva is asking, Pariksit Maharaj asked Shukadeva, how is it that Lord Shiva's worshippers have so much opulence, whereas Lord Vishnu's, and he lives in poverty, and Lord Vishnu's devotees tend to be in poverty, where he is, he has all the opulence. So there's an explanation there of the difference between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. So about Lord Shiva, it says he's always with the material energy, and that's why he gives material opulence to his devotees, because that's his situation. Whereas Lord Vishnu is Nirguna Sakshat. I don't know if that's quoted here, but that's the next verse. In fact, by the way, just after that is the famous verse, Yasyaham Anagrinami Harishetadhanam Shanai. Lord Vishnu says, when I especially bless someone, I take away his wealth and his opulence. That's the context of that. That's part of that answer about, you know, why Vishnu does one thing and Lord Shiva does the opposite. So let's see. As mentioned in the first canto verse that calls the three guna avatars direct expansions of the Supreme Person, this Lord Hara is transcendental to the modes of nature. His transcendental position differs from that of the limited jivas when they assume the roles of Lord Rudra's expansions. Lord Hara is Purusha Dham, non-different in substance from Lord Vishnu. Purusha Dham. As indicated in this verse, That means the verse I just quoted. The verse that this commentary is speaking on. As indicated in this verse by the words nirguna praya, nearly transcendental. Praya means nearly, almost, generally. So nirguna praya, nearly transcendental. Lord Hara sometimes allows himself to be covered by ignorance. It is generally thought that his association with matter subjects him to material change, but in truth he is changeless. So we get all these, as I'm reading this, it's like my head's going back and forth. Like, what is he or is he not? Lord Rudra is eternally related with material nature in her neutral state of equilibrium. When her modes become agitated and develop the visible creation, he becomes Trilinga, surrounded from a distance by the three modes. So when I was reading this, I was thinking, well, maybe the point is surrounded from a distance. So he's surrounded by the three modes, but there's some distance. So this helps us understand how he's touched but not touched. That may not be the point of that sentence, because this goes on to say, Lord Rudra is famous for being covered by the mode of ignorance. How then can one call him Trilinga? In other words, covered by the three modes. So the point wasn't about what I thought it was about, the distance, or maybe it was, or maybe two points were being made, but it was about three modes he's covered by, not just the mode of ignorance. So this says, so how then can one correctly call him Trilinga? The answer is that the modes of nature always intermingle. So there's no such thing as pure ignorance or pure passion or pure goodness. They always mix. This is one of our arguments against the Mayavadis, actually, Jiva Goswami talks about in the Sundarbhas. They think that Vishnu is a personification, or somehow, I guess you could say personification of the pure mode of material goodness. And Jiva Goswami says, there is no such thing. Shuddha Sattva is spiritual. There's no such thing as just the mode of goodness in the material world. So the answer is that the modes of nature always intermingle. So when Rudra contacts Tamaguna, he also contacts Sattva and Rajas. Actually, if there was only Tamaguna, he couldn't do anything, because Rajas has to be there. You can't. Nothing happens without Rajas. Tamaguna is inertia, no movement, nothing happens. So it has to have that. And sattva means intelligence. You can't do anything if you don't have a brain to do it, don't have the intelligence to do it. You can see how these things they're necessary. They can't stand alone. So the last sentence of this commentary, the Bhagavatam concludes that only ordinary people consider him covered by the modes. So maybe that's why it's from a distance. And that's why the from a distance was there, because we're just reading how he's covered, but then it says only ordinary people think that he's that covered. So it's covered, but not exactly covered. So then the next verse is our famous from the Brahma Samhita, Kshiram yata dedivikara vishesha yogat, and so on. Brahma Samhita states, so Rupa Goswami is quoting Brahma Samhita about Lord Shiva, milk changes into yogurt when mixed with a yogurt culture, but actually it is constitutionally nothing but milk. Similarly, Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes the form of Lord Shiva, Shambhu. That's the name in the verse. For the special purpose of material transactions, I offer my obeisances at his lotus feet. Commentary, this verse explains how Lord Rudra remains transcendental to the material modes while apparently being affected by contact with the mode of ignorance. Shambhu, or Rudra, is not a completely separate person from the Supreme Person Govinda. Rather, Shambhu is his special transformation. The Supreme Lord chooses to take charge of the mode of ignorance and thus expands himself for that specific purpose without giving up his transcendental nature. So this tends to be our conception. It's easier to understand. So Vishnu never consorts with material energy. The Bhagavatam explains she always keeps her distance. She's embarrassed, especially because of the service that she has to perform of punishing the jivas. of course, it's for their rehabilitation. But she's shy. She keeps her distance from the Lord. Vilajjamanaya, the word is used. So here, the idea is that when Vishnu does consort or associate with material energy, then he's Shambhu, he's Lord Shiva. So it's really another form of Vishnu. But because there's some connection or not connection, however you want to look at it, with Maya, it's a special form. It's like milk touched with, cultured with yogurt. Yogurt culture. So the next verse, let's see, what do we got? There's a couple more pages here. Some of these purports are a little long, so I won't read them all. Actually, it's almost quarter till. Okay, next verse. Sometimes Rudra is born from Brahma's forehead, and sometimes he is born from Lord Kamalapati, Vishnu. Kamala is Lakshmi, so Lakshmipati. Husband of Lakshmi, Lord Kamalapati, Vishnu. At the end of Brahma's day, the Rudra who generates the all-destructive fire of time appears from Lord Sankarshan. So these are different appearances in this world. Rudra's birth from the forehead of Brahma is described in the Shatapatha Brahmana and in Srimad Bhagavatam, and his birth from the forehead of Lord Vishnu is described in the Maha Upanishad and various Puranas. These descriptions are not incompatible since Rudra appears in different ways during different days of Brahma. So this indicates that he appears every day of Brahma. That's another thing that this book explains, how things happen. Some things happen every day of Brahma. Some things happen in different yugas. Some things happen only once in a lifetime of Brahma. It's all very complicated. So to continue, the Rudra who destroys the universe at the end of Brahma's day is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Beginning from Patala Loka, that's at the bottom of the universe, a fire grows emanating from the mouth of Lord Sankarshan. Its flames shooting upward, driven by great winds, it scorches everything in all directions. So he's saying that this Sankarshan is Rudra. Now, I think elsewhere it's just, well, this is actually from the 11th canto, so this is from the Bhagavatam, but I thought in the 5th canto it says, it's often said that Rudra is an expansion of Lord Sankarshan. So an expansion can be said to be the same, of course, that's another point. So let me go on to this one. So now we get to Sadashiva. Now, Sadashiva is another bewildering one. Who is Sadashiva? Why Sadashiva? The form called Sadashiva is completely free from any trace of the mode of ignorance. He is the cause of the entire material creation and is a personal expansion from the body of the original personality of Godhead. The Vayu Purana and other scriptures state that he resides on Shivaloka. So, sometimes it's said that Advaita Acharya is an expansion of Sadashiva. And Prabhupada says in one purport, maybe quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, as he often does in the CC, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Sadashiva is actually a Vishnu form. So that seems to be what's described here, although it says he lives on Shivaloka. So, thus far, Srila Rupa Goswami has drawn the following conclusions. This is from the beginning of the book, actually, he's referring to. Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Narayan and other forms of Godhead are his Vilasa and Swangsha expansions. And there are also Jivas who become Avesh incarnations. From the Swangsha expansion lying on the Garbha ocean come Vishnu, Brahma, and Rudra, who are originally his own expansions. But the latter two roles are sometimes also played by Jivas. There are other opinions. For example, it might be said that Lord Sadashiva is the original truth, that he alone deserves to be called Swayam Rupa, that Narayana and the others are his expansions, and that the three guna avatars are created by him. This is supported by the Kaivalya Upanishad. Oh, you thought someone was just making it up, didn't you? But actually, Achintyam Avyaktam Anantarupam. Sounds like you're talking about Krishna, doesn't it? Shivam Prashantam Ramitam Brahma Yonim, and so on. Inconceivable, unmanifest, peaceful, immortal, and all auspicious, he is the expander of unlimited forms, the absolute truth, from which everything originates. Having no beginning, middle, or end, he pervades all existence. He is pure, blissful consciousness, formless and amazing. And there's another, actually there are several verses. By meditating on the peaceful, three-eyed, blue-throated Supreme Lord, accompanied by his consort Uma, a sage attains him who is beyond the realm of ignorance and is the master of creation, the source of all created beings and the witness of everything. So there's a couple more verses on the same vein here. So I'll go to the explanation. Although these reliable and authoritative statements of Shruti seem to equate Lord Shiva with Lord Narayana, we need to understand these statements correctly. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana explains that these verses describe only Lord Narayana, the vilas expansion of Krishna, the original Godhead. Shiva is also a name of Narayana. Actually, there's a verse in the Upanishads that says all the names, actually it says all words are Krishna, but all the names of demigods and so on, they're Krishna's names, and he lends them to them, to others. So Shiva is also a name of Narayana, and thus the two names are used interchangeably in the Maha Narayana Upanishad. Shivam Achyutam Narayanam. Shivam Achyutam Narayanam. Similarly, Uma is another name of Kirti, one of Lord Narayana's principal Shaktis. So Uma, we think of the consort of Lord Shiva. It's another name of Kirti, one of Lord Narayana's principal Shaktis. Then, since this passage describes the Lord of Vaikuntha and not the Guna avatar of the material world, Nilakanta indicates one whose neck is adorned with a blue gem. When I was reading it, so that blue-throated, you thought, well, that's Lord Shiva, obviously, right? He's known as Nilakanta. But so is Lord Vishnu, the Lord of Vaikuntha, one whose neck is adorned with a blue gem. I guess that's a Kaustubha gem. Finally, Shiva Loka should be understood as the Supreme Lord's abode, Vaikuntha. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavat Samdarbha has cited verses of Vayu Purana mentioned in this verse. This is the actual verse today. He said that in the Vayu Purana and other scriptures state that he resides on Shiva Loka. So Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavat Sandarbha cited these verses of the Vayu Purana, beginning with words such and such, surrounding the mass of all universal eggs, which glorify Lord Shiva's abode. So it's getting late, but I wanted to mention this because when I came across these verses in this particular verse of the Vayu Purana, actually I edited the Bhagavat Sandarbha about 10 years ago. It's going to come out one of these years. It's being worked on. So anyway, I came across this quote from the Vayu Purana that Jiva Goswami quotes, which it seems he mentions it as Lord Shiva's abode. But what we're hearing here is it's actually not Lord Shiva. So let me just read some of this. I remember when I came across this, I said, what is this talking about? So what it is, well, here, I'll read this here. It says, the Vayu Purana, we hear Lord Shiva's city similarly described. So I don't know what that similarly means, but anyway. Situated all around the multitude of universal eggs, note in the plural, is a dense body of water supporting that mass of eggs on all sides. So the idea here is in the beginning when Mahavishnu creates the material world, the universes come out like, they're called eggs. But there's a conglomerate of them. They're all together. It's like a bunch of foam, you might say. I was thinking they're like tapioca. You have these little round things, and they're all stuck together. The universal eggs. It says, again, situated around the multitude of universal eggs is a dense body of water supporting that mass of eggs on all sides. So, now that I've heard this point came up, I think it was a class I was listening by Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, someone asked him about this. Because generally we think that each universe is covered by different layers. So we can't discount that, it's there in the Bhagavatam. But there's another description where all the masses of the mass of all the universes is covered by different layers. So that's what this description is. I'll just read a little bit of it. It says outside this, first there's water, it says. It says outside this dense water, now this is what threw me off when I was trying to picture this in my mind. It says, extending sideways and upwards is a sphere supported on all sides by intense light. So when I read, I said, a sphere extending sideways and upwards. It's like, what? How does a sphere extend upwards? And a sphere goes around things. It doesn't go up and sideways. So this threw me off, and I couldn't understand the rest of the verse. But then when I finally understood, well, just think of it as a sphere around something. Because as we read more here, that we get this idea. Where it says, then that's supported on all sides by light. So the idea is that first you have the water, then you have light, then you have fire. That light is described as fire. And then after that, let's see, there's a sheath of iron, and then dense air, and then ether, and then false ego and ignorance, and then the mahat, and so on. It goes on and on and on. And then it says, there's a impenetrable darkness. It is darkness where nothing can be seen. This is one of the farther out layers. It is without boundaries and with no identifiable location in space. That's why I can't picture it in my mind, because, okay. Actually, space is part of it, one of the coverings. Which is famous and grand. It is described by Shruti as a divine place which the 30 principal demigods are unable to approach. So beginning, we hear, so this is, oh, I skipped the important sentence here. On the edge of this realm, so after all of these coverings, beyond the darkness and beyond the ether is the radiant, vast abode of Lord Shiva, which is famous and grand. So that's what, and you've probably forgotten by now, but at the end of this purport, it says that this Vayupurana glorifies Lord Shiva's abode. So this is that quote from the Vayupurana, which was quoted in this Laghu Bhagavatamrita, or cited in this Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So this is the idea here that there's, you know, the mass of the universe is all together. They have all these coverings, even more, it sounds like, than we're generally familiar with the seven coverings of the universe. And outside of that is Lord Shiva's abode. But what's being explained here is actually it's not Lord Shiva's abode, it's Lord Vishnu's abode. And it's the Lord Vishnu who, you might say, becomes Lord Shiva, takes the form of Lord Shiva or Shambhu, and associates with the material energy. So, I better stop here. Got myself in enough trouble. Anybody have any questions or comments on that? Or is your head still in Brahma's abode there, out there? And it's interesting, isn't it? Oh, what I mentioned about Bhakti Vigyan Swami, because somebody asked him in connection to this, he said, could this explain why when we have our modern understanding of what the universe is, and it goes on and on and on, and we can't think only, what is it, 4 billion miles in radius or diameter? So then we get to the coverings of the universe. So how are we able to see so many light years or whatever? So he said, well, this could be explained if the coverings are all, if all the universes are compact together, maybe what we're seeing are actually other universes. This explanation would actually make sense of that we're actually seeing other universes. If the coverings don't cover each universe, of course, then that, seems to contradict what the Bhagavatam says. But these things do happen. You come across these. And things happen at different times. Mahavishnu, I was talking about expanse of time, that 311 trillion years. Well, that's just one breath of Mahavishnu. That's an eye blink for him. So he does these things over and over and over and over again, and infinitely, trillions of times, right? So he can do it one way, one time, and another way, another time. Nobody can tell him to do, how to do it. He can do it however he wants. So that's one, that can explain one reason why we get these different descriptions in the Shastras. All right, Manumati Prabhu.
So I always thought Lord Shiva is a person as opposed to a post. Hmm. So it seems from hearing from your description, it seems like it's a post?
Yeah, of course. It seems like he's a person because Lord Vishnu takes that. Well, it is Lord Vishnu in a sense. Vishnu is a person, and he's playing a role as Shiva. So of course, you can expand and withdraw into himself. Again, these things happen somehow or other. You think, well, how can he not be eternal? Well, that's part of what came up here. It does seem like sometimes he's eternal, and sometimes he's a temporary jiva who's taking that role. So it's a post, I suppose you can say it's a post that's sometimes played by a temporary jiva or taken, and sometimes it's a post taken by some eternal personality is taking that post, doing the work there, what needs to be done. And then he, you know, does what he does. Goes back to Shiva Loka and it's on the edge of the outside the material universes. Often we think of, because Lord Shiva is, you can say, he's like a marginal in one sense person, Vishnu and not Vishnu. So his abode, he has several abodes, that's the other thing. And we know it's Kailas in this material world. And so he has also within the coverings of the universe we heard about, he has an abode there. And he has an abode outside. Generally think of it outside before you really get into Brahmaloka. Then you get, we hear about this in the, of course, in the Brahma Samhita also. Devi Mahesha Haridam Teshu Teshu. So Haridam is between Devi Dham and Lord Narayan's abode in the spiritual world. So that tends to be how we think of him, that he is in between somehow. It's hard to get our brains around it.
And who is Gopeshwar Mahadev?
He's one of the lingas. I didn't read all the names of the lingas. I didn't think they came up here. He's a form of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva takes the linga form. Of course, that's also we hear about in Brahma Samhita. I've been reading the commentaries on Brahma Samhita. And even then, it's hard to understand who this Shambhu is exactly, and Shiva linga and the yoni and so on. The general idea is that Shiva consorts the linga and the yoni is Vishnu, Shiva and Durga. They're consorting to bring the living entities in this material world into this material world. But we hear that Mahavishnu does that with his glance. So Shambhu is considered also the glance of Lord Vishnu. So in any case, Lord Shiva has many forms, so he also takes linga forms in this world. He's generally, of course, he's worshipped that way generally. So he has, there's a pastime. There's the Gopeshwar, he became a gopi in Krishna Leela. In fact, I think we had an article in BTG recently, I don't know if it came out, I think that came out already, that issue describes that, tells that story. Ramana Sukhaprabhu, he's a devotee. He likes to broadcast the glories of Lord Shiva. He likes Lord Shiva somehow, Ramana Sukha. He wrote that article. He's thinking more how he can talk more about Lord Shiva. And somehow he has an appreciation for him. Yes, Ranga. Ragatmika Prabhu.
When you were reading, describing Lord Shiva, two words, formless and amazing. Do you recall that?
What did it say, formless?
Formless.
Well, as we say, it's difficult to understand. Yeah. Was that, was that in this list? No, inconceivable, unmanifest, peaceful, immortal, and all auspicious. Yeah, I don't know where I read formless. Was it in the verse? Of course, Earl, just in the verse that this was the commentary on, it says the form of Sadashiva is completely free from any trace of the mode of ignorance. So there it mentions a form. And the verse that we read today says that, you know, we certainly hear about his form there. It has a reddish color. Now there's another place, in the Bhagavatam it says he's a mixture of red and blue. So I think, well, that means he's purple, right? When you mix red and blue, you get purple. Now here it says reddish, rukma. Rukma means red. You know, Kapila also means red or rose-colored. I was always thinking, we depict Lord Kapila with blonde hair, I think. Narada Muni has blonde hair also, golden hair. And he wears red. He's really awesome looking. Red clothes and red, yellow hair. Nice combination of colors. Striking. Nothing subtle about that, is it? Red and yellow. Yes, Prabhu. What kind of Prabhu?
Yeah, Hari Bol. So, Marumati's question that Gopishwar Mahadev, Sadashiv, it's described there in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Shivakyam, Tamoguna Vivajita, Angabhuta, Swayam Prabhu. That Sadashiv was a direct expansion of Swayambhu means Sri Krishna. That Sadashiva performs the Leela of becoming Gopishwar Mahadev.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So okay. That Gopishwar Mahadev, and in the Padma Puran, it's described there that in the Ras Mandal, this is an ontological description of the Ras Mandal, from the left side of Krishna, Radhika expands, from the right side, that Sadashiva expands. So it's described that Sadashiva, Sada means eternal or permanent, Shiv means auspicious. The eternal auspicious desire of Sri Krishna is to understand what is the prema of Radhika as it's displayed in the Ras Leela. Therefore, that Sadashiva performs the pastime of becoming Gopishwar Mahadev. Mm. That same Sadashiv appears in Gaur Leela as Advaita Acharya, where he gets to see the result of what happens when Krishna realizes what is the mood of Radhika by becoming Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
So let's end on that note. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.